This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
On this week's episode of White Wine Question Time.
Oh yeah, we had one of the beds, because it was 14 bunk beds on a touring bus. So there was always one or two beds that were never used. So we decided to get a sunbed company in and turn it into a sunbed. So when we're traveling from place to place, you can get on and get a nice tan. So you turn up on stage, look great. Yeah, I remember. Any Irish people that you meet on holiday, the first thing they look for is an Irish bar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Somewhere to get an Irish breakfast. Yeah. Go, where can you get the best Irish breakfast?
Went to that shop there and see to do the Irish sun.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun to see what's going on at home. You only got here today.
Question number two. We talked about a lot.
No, he just broke the chair and fell on the ground. Oh! You're right. Come on, we're working the ears.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guests this week have been friends since 1998 and colleagues since 2016, having both left huge 90s pop acts to years later strike out as a duo, forming a kind of cut-and-shut version of two of Ireland's biggest boy bands, which they've toured everywhere, from South Africa and Cambodia to Vietnam and here in the UK. In their respective bands, they collectively sold over 55 million records around the world. They notched up more than 17 number one singles and performed with everyone from Mariah Carey and Pavarotti to the Bee Gees and Mr. Bean. Now, they're working as Boys Life, recording their own original material, as well as performing some of their biggest hits from their time in both Boyzone and Westlife after years away from the original lineups. In the intervening years, one's worked for the best part of a decade on Coronation Street, the other launched a hugely successful television and singing career on the other side of the world in Australia. So there is a lot to catch up on. Let's dial them in, shall we? It's Keith Duffy and Brian McFadden.
Hello.
Hey.
Can I just say how weird it was when you were talking about they've been to Cambodia, but it was really random. That's like kind of saying they've been touring all over the UK, Leicester and Hull and Plymouth.
Well, you did go to Cambodia on tour, right?
Yeah, well, we at Southeast Asia has always been, for Westlife and Boyzone, was always a huge successful market for us. As you well know, Miss Thornton, as you came over there to see us at one stage.
Keith, I am so flattered and impressed that you can remember the night in Indonesia, because you fill in the blanks, right? As I remember it, I came over to do something with you guys on tour in Indonesia somewhere. We went to a very polite nightclub where everybody danced politely. It was very quiet in there, and we were, I believe, quite smashed. And then the next thing I remember is being in the back of a pickup truck, which I think you hotwired, singing Love Machine.
Well, I'm kind of surprised myself. I mean, there's so many things that my kids show me on the internet, on YouTube and stuff, that I have absolutely no recollection of at all. But for some reason, I remember driving around Jakarta in Indonesia, sitting in the back of a pickup truck with you, singing I'm Just a Love Machine. And I don't know who was driving, whether it was Shane or Ronan, but I know it wasn't our truck. We shouldn't have been driving, and we certainly shouldn't have been singing out the back of it at 3 o'clock in the morning.
As I recall, you hotwired that pickup truck.
Allegedly. Really? Well, I'd never admit to anything like that.
And then we were driving around singing I'm Just a Love Machine, and the police pulled us over. And it turned out, thank God, there were massive Boyzone fans, and we got let off. Is that your recollection?
Yeah, I don't remember the police part. I don't remember the hot wiring part, because that's not, like, you know, flight. But I do remember driving around some part of Jakarta. I think it was Jakarta, I'm not sure. But there was another time, I don't know whether it was the same night, that we broke into a shopping mall and we got chased by security across an ice rink.
That's right. Why?
Do you remember that?
Why did we break into an ice rink? But I'd just like to add that, you know, we don't advocate this behaviour.
I would imagine there might have been one or three glasses of wine involved, Kate.
Yeah, and no thought-provoking questions. Jeez, that was good fun, wasn't it? Well, we all lived to tell the tale, and no crimes were committed because there's no police records to back it up.
Yeah, well, this is it. But in your introduction, you said, colleague since 98. I go, hang on a minute, I know Kate since 93.
No, you two have been
colleagues. I didn't realise you were talking about us. I thought, oh, I'll never away with that one.
Yeah, I have known you an awfully long time, have I not? Which is lovely. Yeah.
And you still look gorgeous as ever.
As do you, Duster.
Do you remember the old nickname? Good girl yourself.
And Brian, I've known you a long time as well, but you two didn't come into each other's sphere really until Boyzone sort of took Westlife on tour like the interns.
Well, I actually met both of you probably around the same time, because when Westlife started, we obviously started as Boyzone Support Act. You were also brought into BMG at the time. I think it was Louis Walsh brought you in to do Westlife's media training. Remember that?
It wasn't so much media training, it was to get you ready to do a smash hits piece.
Yeah, it was something like that, but it was to basically try and make us speak English, because we weren't very good at
it. It was trying to teach you how to talk so people could understand your Irish accent.
I don't think it was actually meant for me. I think it was more meant for
the fellas from the west side of the country. Yeah.
You just blow down with talking, fellas, because people in England haven't a clue what you're saying.
People in England, I never knew what they were fucking saying.
I never knew what Louis was saying, apart from when we got to the end of a phone call, and then it was just a sort of rap version of goodbye. Goodbye, 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 goodbye.
Yeah, no, all mammies in Ireland do that. Goodbye, bye, 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 bye. See it, bye, 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 bye.
All the mammies in Ireland, that's brilliant, do they? Is that right?
All the mammies, yeah, bye, 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 son, bye, son, yeah, bye, 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 yeah.
I'm gonna pick up on some of that stuff with you in a little while. But before we do, I wanted to talk about, because I haven't spoken to you both since you started this venture. And it is like, I hope you didn't take it as an insult, it is like a cut and shut version of the two bands that you presided over for so long. I mean, the huge catalogue of hits as well. Quite a smart move on your part.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, we got together. Myself and Brian met back in 2016 on the golf course, as we did over the years. And Brian told me that it was coming up to Christmas and he was doing a big show in Whelan's in Dublin, which is a really credible rock venue in Ireland. And to go from like being in a boy band to going in there with your acoustic guitar, your live band, and, you know, singing your own songs that you had recorded and written yourself, it was quite an achievement. I was very, very impressed. So myself and a few of my buddies, and my son actually, and his mates and my mates, because we all hang around together now, we're so young. We all headed into Brian's We went to see Brian's show. I'd just come off doing 6 months in the West End in Trafalgar Studios. I was doing a play there called A Handful of Stars, a Billy Roach play. So I just come off doing that and met Brian and went to a show in Dublin, and he blew the roof off the place. We had a great night. Sitting backstage over a pint of Guinness or two, as you do, Brian said to me, "What are you up to?" And I was in the trolls of writing like an autobiographical show, a live show. I mean, I'd been approached, as Brian had over years, by various publishing companies about writing a book, writing a story of my experience in the pop world for 25 years or whatever. And I never really fancied, I mean, I had some great stories, but I preferred to tell them rather than people read them out. You know, I never even considered doing an audio book. Brian asked me, I told him, I said, I'm thinking of going on the road as a one-man show. It's the only thing I haven't really done. And the fear of being on my own on stage for an hour and a half or 2 hours, you know, talking and singing, I said, scares the bejesus out of me. So I said, I like that scare factor. I like the fear of theatre, of live theatre, and I like the idea of this. And he said, what are you going to talk about? I said, well, just stories of experiences of being in the band, like you said earlier, performing with Pavarotti, performing with the Bee Gees, performing with Joe Cocker, BB King, just all the different people that we got to meet and perform with over the years, and tell the story from our perspective, you know, how we felt as, you know, hard working class Irish lads after jumping into the pop world and our lives changing overnight. So I just thought it would be a great show, and Brian agreed. He said, geez, that's a fantastic idea, I'd love to do something like that. And I said, well, hang on, I don't want to do it on my own. I'd hate to go on tour on my own. We'd have more fun together. You can't play golf on your own, can you? So, we decided to team up and do it together. So we rewrote the show, and we put in all his stories from Westlife, mine from Boyzone. We did a few songs from Boyzone, a few songs from Westlife. We sold out in 4 hours. Literally the whole tour sold out in 4 hours. We put part two on 3 nights into the first show, and that sold out. And then it organically grew into more of a concert. Just to correct you, we might have had 55 million worldwide sales. I think 50 million of them were Westlife and 5 million were Boyzone, to be fair. but we've had over 20 number ones between 20. Us. Again, that's probably 14 or 15 Westlife and 6 Boyzone. But nevertheless, we're a collective item now. Yeah. Being a collective item means we've got something like 4 or 5 ex-wives as well, which is great.
Most of them Brian's.
Yep. So I just share everything with Brian. He shares everything with me. Good and bad, you know.
And Brian, how have you been? I haven't spoken to you in so long. Is life treating you kind?
Life is great, yeah. I'm enjoying what we're doing now. You know, it's much more fun doing it this way because we don't work as much. We kind of go and do shows, you know, a few shows a week, kind of, you know, most of the time. And then the rest of the time, we're just home with our families and enjoying life. So I think we're kind of really appreciating what we get to do now. You know, it never feels like a chore. It never feels like work, which is probably something that we both felt, I think, in the early days of Westlife and Boyzone, that it had got to be in a job rather than something that you should be really appreciating and loving. So we're taking it all in now. We're traveling around the world and we're excited to go to places, you know, the likes of Australia, Southeast Asia, Africa and places. We actually get excited now. And we don't just go and do concerts there. We actually spend some time in the places and take it all in. And we rob trucks and drive around the town screaming out the back of them.
Break into ice skating rinks for no reason.
I go sliding across on our arse. But he's also a daddy again.
I know.
I was just about to get to that. I was going to say, and then my personal life is brilliant. I've got a new baby. Well, she's not new. She's nearly 2 now, but... Yeah, so we're really enjoying the balance of life at the moment between work and home.
I bet that's so different doing it second time around, Bri, because when Lily and Molly were born, you were a child yourself, really.
Yeah.
And in the throes of a crazy international schedule.
Well, I was younger than both of them are now when I had them.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're older than I was when they were born, which is great.
But my son is now older than I was leaving Boyzone, when Boyzone broke up.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, Boyzone broke up at the end of 99 into 2000, and I was 26 at the time, 26, 27. And my son Jay is 27 next month. So, like, it's bizarre.
Is he that old? Jeez. And how's your daughter? Is she good?
Mia is wonderful. She's absolutely. She's 23. She was 23 last Saturday. Wow. We went over to Disney World. She loves Mickey Mouse and she loves Disney. So we brought her for her birthday over to Disney World. She works now for an American pharmaceutical company. She's coding and doing all sorts of stuff. She got her bachelor's of science out of Dublin City University, and she's working for a big American firm. So she's doing absolutely fantastic. Considering, you know, obviously for those that don't know, my daughter has autism, and she was nonverbal until she was 7 years of age. And you know, we fought for years and years to get the appropriate intervention, the appropriate education, and we succeeded, thank God. And she worked very, very hard herself, and she sets the bar very high for herself. And she's the most beautiful human being. She's a gorgeous girl. And she works really, really hard in front of the computer screen. So when she got a week off over her birthday, I rang Brian. I said, Brian, I'm taking a week out. I'm bringing my daughter to see Mickey Mouse. So I only got back in yesterday.
Oh, do you know what? That's so lovely to hear, Keith. I can't believe how far she's come, because you and Lisa fought so hard to get the support and to keep hope alive, right? We just had Ken Bruce on the show. Ken's son has just made a film with Chris Packham. He's an autistic young man who is what they call pre-verbal because he spoke once. So he doesn't want to call him non-verbal. And he was able to make a film using an actor to read out his views, thoughts, opinions, and illustrate how he sees the world. It's amazing. And it's a lifetime of work to just get to that. And to start unlocking potential. Brilliant. Well, congratulations to you and Lisa in keeping your paws up. And
well, congratulations to Mia.
She's
a force to be reckoned with. And she has the most pure heart. She's just a beautiful young lady. And to see the excitement on her face. She's afraid of nothing in Disneyland or Universal Studios. She's afraid of nothing. Every roller coaster, every ride. She actually yawns through rides that Lisa was crying through, you know what I mean? So she was yawning as Lisa was literally screaming for her life, you know?
That's brilliant. Okay, boys, are you ready for question number one? In the 90s, Steps, who'd recently been on the podcast, told us that the first time they'd had the money in their budget to hire a tour bus, the bus that they got had been used before by Boyzone, and that on that bus, you'd left behind a little something. You'd left your sunbed, a full-blown solarium. So my question is that true? And can we revisit some of the other things you did, said, or used to do in the 90s that people no longer do and maybe should?
Oh, yeah, we had one of the beds, because it was 14 bunk beds on a touring bus. So we didn't need the full 14 bunks because there was only five of us in the band. We had a tour manager, two security, a bus driver, and possibly a couple of members of family at certain times. So there was always one or two beds that were never used. So we decided to get a sunbed company in and turn it into a sunbed. So when we're traveling from place to place, you can get on and get a nice tan. So you turn up on stage, look great. Yeah, I remember.
I mean, that is so brilliantly 90s, right? That is just on the money in terms of defining that decade and the kind of pop music that you guys made. So I wondered, can we revisit some of the other things you did or said or used to do in the 90s that people no longer do? And maybe there's a case to bring some of them back. Maybe not the sunbeds on tour buses, you know, but...
Well, the problem was if you get on the bus late at night after being out and you had a bit of a hangover when you woke up and you'd still a 2 or 3 hour drive left, you'd get a better bed and lie in the sunbed, because at least when you get there, you might be dying with a hangover, but you look great. As you sweat and drink. Now, it's not advisable to do a sunbed for 3 hours. Let me just say that. It's not advisable to do
really
sunbeds at all.
No, it's really not. But I guess for a 90s boy band where looks were everything and photo shoots were a daily occurrence, was there a rota for the sunbed? Like, did you fight over it?
No, there was only a couple of us that liked to use it.
I think it's very, very, very obvious who the two people that would have used that were. It would have been you and Shane Lynch.
Yeah,
no, okay, well, Roland,
why not? Why, Mikey was always a big fan of a sunbed.
Was he?
Yeah, I remember after one tour in Dublin, we'd just come home after playing all over the UK and Europe, and we had a finished massive, massive gig in Dublin, and then Mikey had an after show party back at his house out in the country, out in North County Dublin, and all our dancers were there, all our partners, everybody was there. It was a free house. Everybody was. It was just a great party night. But He had a sunbed room in his house.
You sure that wasn't a back door at home?
But there was people all through the night disappearing, going, where were you? And they're coming back glowing, going, ah, oh, I just went to the 5 minute sunbed.
That's brilliant. What else happened in the 90s that no longer does, but you kind of miss?
Spontaneity. With mobile phones now, everything's planned. I remember the days of going, right, I'll meet you on Saturday, and you'd say a place at a time, and then you wouldn't speak to the person until you actually met them.
Underneath Cleary's clock on O'Connell Street. I mean, yeah, there at 3 o'clock.
But now it's like people are like, oh, are we still on for Saturday? And then on Friday, like, we still on for tomorrow? And then they'll text you, yeah, okay, I'll see you later on this afternoon. And they'll text you, go, just leaving the house now, see you in an hour. Yeah, about 10 minutes away. It's like, oh, I'm here. And then 5 minutes later, are you enjoying yourself? And then you're sitting opposite them having lunch. And they send you a picture of the lunch going, this is delicious. They're going, I'm looking at you, I can see. But
I think in the 90s, though, for the music business, what was so magical about the 90s was, you know, the pop world at the time was fantastic. We had the Smash Hits Roadshow, which every pop group in the UK got together. Everybody was on the same tour bus. We played all the arenas from the top of Scotland right down to the bottom of the UK, bottom of England. It was great fun. You know, you had EYC, Bad Boys Inc., E17, Sean McGuire, PJ and Duncan, who are obviously Ant and Dec. You know, you had those two girls, which was Denise Van Outen and somebody else. I can't remember who the somebody else was. But everybody toured together. And not only that, with music, you released your album. It was a hard copy that you went to HMV to buy or to Virgin Megastore to buy. You bought the album. You listened to every track. You put it in your CD player or in your cassette recorder tape back in 93. And you would listen to song one right through to song 12. So, you know, and every band that kind of put a story through the, you know, bands would sit down and decide what song should be number one, number two, number three, number four. And there was a story.
It's like a movie.
It was like a movie for listening to the album. You know, and that was great about listening to music in the 90s. You'd listen, like my favourite group was U2. So when I'd buy a new U2 album, I'd listen to it from start to finish over and over again. And you know, if I listen to those albums now, I know what next song is coming. Today, the way the music is done, I mean, Brian and I have we've written and recorded our own album. We've put it out there. And, you know, it's on all the platforms, on Spotify, Apple Music, all those things. But people just listen to maybe one or two songs from the album that is their favourite song that might not necessarily have been a single. They'll just listen to songs at random. So the journey of the album is gone. Nobody's going on the journey with song to song. They're just picking. And I think that is a bad thing for the music business. I think it's bad for artists that have created this movie, this kind of, you know, journey. And nobody's going on those journeys anymore, you know?
Yeah, and I think the way bands are signed now is so different. It's literally A&R by data. It's looking at numbers of followers, listen through rates, and there's none of that. I mean, there's very few Louis Walshes walking around going, "I'll have that one and that one and that one, please." And come on,
yeah,
lads,
because there's no money. That's why the money's gone out of the music industry. There's still money in doing live shows, but you don't make money selling records because music is free. So you don't have the Louis Walshes, the Simon Cowells putting together pop groups and spending a lot of money, spending hundreds of thousands and working with producers like Max Martin or Steve Mack. Those days are gone. So you look now, and the only people that are really getting signed are singer-songwriters. Like, look at the biggest artists on the planet at the moment. It's like Ed Sheeran, Lewis Capaldi, Adele, Harry Styles. They're
Taylor
all
Swift.
Singer-songwriters. There's no pop groups. The pop groups are gone. The day of that is now gone.
Yeah.
But you've got the K-pop, which is massive.
Yeah, but in Europe, it's gone. And to be honest with you, if you look, that's why so many bands are getting back together, because there's a huge hole there, because there is no new groups coming out. That's why you've got Bewitched, Death Club, Seven, Steps, Boyzone, Westlife, Boys Live. That's why there's so many. Even JLS got back together, because there's no bands.
You talked about, Keith, you mentioned there, like, going on the Smash Hits tour, which I know you both did. And I think the one that you were talking about with Sean McGuire, I think that was on my watch when I was the editor. And Sean McGuire on that tour, I've still got pictures of some of the things that we did to Sean McGuire on that tour. Sean is now a very successful, big Hollywood actor doing great work in LA.
I'm still great friends with Sean. I go and stay with him in LA. When I was over doing Pilot Season myself after I came out of Corry first, and I lived with Sean, and Sean coached me for my auditions every day in Pilot Season. So yeah, we're still very much in touch. Yeah, he did But the fairy tale thing he did, what was that called?
Not a clue.
So it was a big American show with all the kind of fairy tale characters. He played Robin Hood. Once Upon a Time, I think it was called. He'd done that for like 10 years. He did another show for about 10 years in front of a live audience. He's doing great. But we did some nasty things to Sean. When he was going on stage, we put his big kabuki that said Sean McGuire upside down and backwards so the audience couldn't understand a word of it.
We'd film him doing things, really embarrassing things, like when he'd had a few beers or whatever. And then when we'd go into an arena to start sound check, we'd put them up on the big screen to show everyone.
And we'd speed up his vocals so we sounded like something out of the Muppet Show. Yeah. And then we took the windscreen wipers off his Previa when it was snowing. so he was late, he got no sound check. Yeah, we did all sorts of things to Sean.
And it sounds like you're all fucking bullies, to be honest. Yeah.
And I tell you, who else was on that tour was All Saints, but it was All Saints without the sisters. It was before the sisters joined the band. It was only...
Yeah.
It was Mel and
Shaz.
Yeah, it was just Shaz and Mel.
Yeah.
The sisters hadn't joined at that stage, so we'd done a tour with those girls. Yeah, and then obviously later when the sisters joined Boyzone and All Saints, we did a lot of joint touring together around Europe through when Louis Parker, God rest him. Louis Parker was their agent and our agent, and he put All Saints and Boyzone together in various gigs all around Europe. It's a crazy world.
And Brian, what do you remember about 90s life that you kind of pine for?
It's the same thing. The music industry is so different now. It's just such a good time to be in the industry. As he says, everybody kind of, you would do TV shows together and hang out. And it was proper. I suppose it was like what it was in the old days of Motown and 70s was the same. And I think we kind of came at the very end of that community of pop music, where we all knew each other. We all went out, we all did gigs, but we all went out together afterwards and hung out. And it was a big old community. And I think we were pretty much the end of it. And I feel sorry for people that are successful now that they never got to enjoy that. Like, there's so many little things that were amazing about being in a pop group in the 90s. Like doing things like Top of the Pops, doing things like Blue Peter, Saturday morning television, like CD UK. Yeah. It was the best. They were so excited to do that. You'd always be excited to see the other acts and hang out. And, it just seems like such a lonely business for these people now where they just go out, they do their touring, they put out the music. There's nowhere for them to really... enjoy their success. I mean, even the Brit Awards is crap now. All those things are just gone to pots.
Oh, we used to have so much fun at the Brits.
That was brilliant. But you see, you'd take that, you'd Boyzone, you'd Westlife, you'd those pop groups. But then you had Blur, you had Oasis, you had the indie rock bands. It was so interesting, the music back then.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I just saw an interview recently about the Oasis. I mean, it's such a crime that the two brothers just don't make up and go back on the road.
Do you ever wonder what would have happened if you'd stayed put, you two? And, well, I mean, Keith, you did. But, Brian, you left quite early on in Westlife's story.
Yeah, but not really, because, it's different. Because Oasis, I'm talking about writing songs. We didn't really write songs. So if I'd have stayed, it probably would have been the exact same as what they did anyway. I don't think anything would have changed. I don't think their paths or their creativity changed when I left. It probably stayed exactly where it was going to go.
Yeah, you're quite right. It was. I mean, you went on to start writing as well outside of the
group.
Well, I wrote in the group as well.
The main song was written by Steve Mack and by the Swedes, so the single.
Right? You say the Swedes, right? I was lucky enough a couple of years ago to work with Max Martin, and I know you both know Max Martin, right? Do you know him, Keith?
Yeah. Max done a few of our stuff. Yeah.
So Max is, for the listener, Max is. After Lennon and McCartney, certainly after Paul McCartney, the most successful living songwriter on the planet right now. And you were there at the infancy of his songwriting career. What was it like working with somebody that's gone on to have, his hits are enormous. His songbook is huge. And most of his songs have been kind of incorporated into the musical and Juliet, which is kind of a modern day take on Romeo and Juliet. But how did, because he's a super lovely guy, but very unassuming.
Yeah, he's very down to earth. He's very quiet, very shy. And it's amazing because he comes from a rock world. He spent his whole life and career in rock bands and even heavy, dirty, heavy metal bands. But he just had this incredible way of understanding what a pop song was. And you know, I think the best way of explaining what Max Martin is he is the one that created 90s pop music. You know, even for bands like Boyzone and Westlife and One Direction and Blue and all the people that came after what Max Martin created, you know, it all comes from what he started, which is, you look at the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, you know, not only did he create that 90s pop sound, but he was able to adapt it and develop it and turn it into what became then 2000s pop with Katy Perry and Taylor Swift and all those people. And it just seems that people look to Max Martin to see what's going to be the next thing, you know, what's the next sound that every artist is going to aspire to do. He did it in the 90s, he developed it in the 2000s, and you know, right now he's probably coming up with what's going to be next.
Yeah. Yeah, and he runs his operation out of Los Angeles like the old Motown model. So it's a house full of writers and producers.
Well, he did that in Sweden as well. That's how he started in Chiron Studios in Sweden, him and Dennis Pop. Dennis is
Dennis was an old rocker as well, right?
Well, yeah, the two of them said they started it together. It was Max and Pop together. And then when Dennis died, then that's when Max kind of had the whole idea for Sheeran, and he just brought in all these incredible songwriter producers. And you look at the hits that have been written just from that place. Forget about what Max wrote. Look at what that house wrote. And I don't know if you've ever been to Sheeran Studios, but you literally walk in the door, and upstairs is just, there's like four sitting rooms with PlayStations and snooker tar, pool tables and air hockey and all of that. And you walk in and it's just, you'll have Britney Spears over here, Backstreet Boys over here, you'll have somebody else over here. And everyone's just sitting, hanging out. And then downstairs, there's like five massive studios, all the same size. And you'll have a world-class producer in each one working on all these different bands. And they're all happening at the same time. Incredible.
As two lads from Ireland, when you're in that environment, how does that feel? How do you adapt to those environments, especially as young men?
It was more difficult for me, I think, than Brian, because we were young boys that needed to be complimented. We needed to be reassured and we needed to be championed. We didn't need to be pushed to the back and told we weren't needed. And that's what happened in the early days of Boyzone. So when you did get an opportunity or a chance to go in with a producer and sit down and to write and to record, you know, singing is all about understanding your voice. It's about confidence. It's about breathing. It's about, you know, knowing what to do. And if, you know, if some people are natural born singers like Brian, you know, some people just can get up in the morning and whatever they sing in the shower, you could actually record and put it on a tape. You know, but people like me, if they spend 6 hours warming up and then you'll only get 3 minutes of it and then it's shite, you know. but my experience now, since in the last 6 years, you know, in the last couple of years in Boyzone, Ronan was a great coach. And then bringing us up to modern day when I've been in the studio with Brian, like before Boys Life even started, Brian and I sat down and Brian basically did vocal coaching with me for nearly 8 months, sitting around the laptop doing line by line, sometimes in some songs doing word by word to try and educate me and to bring me around from being a backing singer to be a lead singer and breathing exercises and warm-up exercises. And then we went into the studio and I felt so much more confident and felt so much more assured. And for the first time ever, I liked what I heard back when I went into this recording booth and I came back in, listened to what I just recorded. For the first time, I liked my own voice. I thought, wow, that sounds great. I'm really happy with that. And that never happened in Boyzone. So it's you know, it's a difficult process. It's still a stressful one for me, but it's one now that I'm starting to enjoy an awful lot more because of the I suppose, the help, the training and the compliments and the, you know, the vibe I get from Brian.
Has Keith gone for a wee?
Not for a wee.
Brilliant.
Listen, once you get past 40,
age.
You can't sit for an hour to an interview. You say you have to understand that wee breaks are essential. Yes, we're going to have to. We have to wear nappies on stage because we're on for 2 hours.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Question number 2. I talked about a lot.
No, he just broke the chair and fell on the ground.
Oh!
Okay. That's a rookie news. See, we're playing golf later on. Now he's making an excuse that he hurts knees, so when I beat, he has an excuse.
Yeah.
I can't believe he just did that.
You're going to be charged for that.
Okay. That's good.
You're right.
I was sitting on the luggage holder in the bedroom at a stop.
Must have been your excess luggage that did that. Not your excess baggage.
It's a bit of a take on the throwing the telly out the window, isn't it?
Now we're going to have a half an hour cheek each on this chair.
Question number 2. We've talked a lot about your success, and success can often be easy and very often can teach us little by way of comparison to maybe the more challenging and difficult times life puts in our path. So what life lessons have presented you with the biggest bumps in the road, and what have they taught you?
For me, I would say neglecting your family and your friends for work. Yeah, definitely in the Westlife days, you know, we were just gone the whole time. And for some reason, we were made to believe in our head that everything to do with work was far more important than anything else. And every single thing that you did was too important. And I'll never forget, one of the worst things ever was when I was in Westlife and we went to America. And it was our first time to try and break America. And we had a couple of big TV shows to do. And I remember Mark's granddad passed away and he wanted to go home for the funeral. And I remember the record company basically telling us that we couldn't miss that TV show. But it was too big. You can't go home. You have to stay. And it always stays with me. And I think back to and not just in Westlife, but I'll be honest as well, even when I went solo for a bit, all of a sudden, there was so many times when things were too important for work wise that you kind of chose it over your family. And when I look back now, I go, no show, no TV show, no gig, no nothing is ever bigger than your family and friends. And it took me a long time to realize that. And it's my one regret of the years that I was in Westlife is that I did kind of put my work way, way, way above my family and friends, which I shouldn't do. And I think we've learned now that the most important thing is for us is now family and our home life and works around that.
Yeah, your priorities are right.
Well,
yeah. What about you, Keith? What have been the biggest challenges?
Well, for me, it's different because I was the first kind of boy bander to become a daddy back in 96. That was a scary time because we got together in 93. We only really started traveling to the UK in mid-94. The real success started in 95, and that's when the growth started to happen. You know, coming into 90, it was the end of 95 when our album went straight into the charts at number one and in Top of the Pops, the only time you get to perform on Top of the Pops if your song is not in the top three is if your album goes straight in at number one and you can pick a random album track to be played to perform on Top of the Pops. And once you perform on Top of the Pops on a Thursday night, your album or your song went through the roof.
Yeah.
You know, that was kind of got a staple in your number one. And by chance, by complete coincidence and chance, we decided out of 13 or 14 tracks that were on that album, we decided the song that we were going to sing was Father and Son. We had one mobile phone between the five of us, and it wasn't a mobile phone as we know them today. It was a big block, and a battery that went around your neck with a strap.
It was a Motorola.
Yeah, it's probably Motorola.
I mean, like a handbag.
Yeah, we used to have to take turns carrying it. It was too fucking heavy. But our tour manager, Mark Flunky, used to give us terrible stick. He goes, why the fuck are you boys paying for a mobile phone? Sure, nobody's ever going to ring it. None of your mates have them. You know, who are you going to ring? But anyway, this particular day in Top of the Pops, the phone rang, and it was Lisa that back in Dublin telling me that she was pregnant, that she's going to have a baby, you know. And that my life changed that day. You know, we were kind of starting on the brink of you know, superstardom, traveling around the world, and you know, I was going to be a daddy. So it was an amazing emotional time. 9 months later, I was father of a son, which is kind of ironic. But yeah, it changed my direction then for a while. And then obviously media came. My boys on, so, like, kind of decided to take a year off at the end of 1999-2000, which developed the 7 years. Mia was born in 2000. And obviously we spoke earlier on, Mia had autism. So I suppose for me, having a family so young and me being so immature at the time, didn't lend itself to each other very well. And if you believe me, because this is what I figured out myself, I was actually quite a shy person in the 90s, and I didn't like being shy. I liked the idea of being an extrovert rather than an introvert. So what I did to disguise that was I was very boisterous. I was very loud. I came across overconfident. And as a result, people believed that that was who I was. But really, it was all hiding a shyness that I didn't realize till years later. But I suppose to get to the point was, I used to answer every question trying to be funny without thinking what the question was, without thinking about what I was saying before I said it, taking things out of context, trying to be funny, when things shouldn't have been taken out of context. A lot of things are serious. A lot of things people take very serious, you know, and it affects people's lives in a serious manner. And for you to make light of that or to make fun of that or to try to be funny in that moment is wrong. And we didn't get any media training. We weren't, you know, kind of educated on how to hold ourselves. We were young 18, 19 year old boys, and we were being asked questions on current affairs about the state of the world at certain times, about, you know, serious politics. And because we were being asked these questions, we believed we must have the knowledge to be able to answer them. And we didn't. And we made light of them, and I made light of them. And I just think, looking back now, if I was to give my younger self any advice, it would be to know, have the filters, know your audience, listen to the questions that are being asked of you, think of your answer before you answer it, and I suppose just think before you speak. In a nutshell, think before you speak and know your surroundings.
What about the challenges of reinvention? Because you had, a bit like footballers, the most successful years of your career before you'd even looked at your 30th birthday. And then you have to carry on. You have to reinvent. And, you know, Brian, for you, you did that on the other side of the world. Keith, you went to Manchester and spent 10 years in Coronation Street. I mean, big leaps.
Yeah, I don't think we ever reinvented. I think, you know, we go through stages in your life and your career kind of follows your age. You know, I think after I left Westlife, I knew that musically for me, I had to kind of follow my age. I couldn't still do the same thing, and everything goes like that, your style and the way you talk, and everything grows with you. So I don't think we've ever really reinvented ourselves. We've just kind of adapted with ourselves getting older and our lives changing, you know. That's what I think personally. Anyway, I don't think I've ever sat there and gone, right, I need to completely reinvent myself. I think we've just naturally progressed to where we are today.
Yeah, no, I'm a different story, you know, because Brian was always a guitar player, a songwriter, singer, whereas when Boyzone broke up, I was kind of left in the desert. I didn't know where to go or what to do. Ron and Stephen and Mikey all signed solo deals. Myself and Shane weren't even approached or asked or offered one, so
we have a single together, though.
Later on, myself and Shane brought out a song, Taking the Piss Out of Us. It was a Milli Vanilli song, and I suppose over all of the years of the press and the media stuff, lagging Shane and I saying we never sang a note. We thought, the best single to bring out would be a Milli Vanilli song. We never sang a note either. We had great fun with that.
You know.
We done the Smashers Roadshow and everything, Dub and Shane together. You know,
Westlife, low life, go and get your own life.
We had a rap in the middle going, Westlife, low life, go and get your own life. Look into my eyes and see. No. When the going gets tough, the puff got going.
I got something to tell you.
We kind of slagged off everybody in it. We ripped off boy bands off everybody. We got slated for it. I think it went in charts at 34 or something like that. But it was a disaster. But yeah, no,
technically a hit. My 40 is
yeah, 34.
It's technically a hit.
I only read that yesterday. With my kids, Jay and me, have shown me videos of me singing. Like the Pavarotti story, I completely forgot about that until Jay showed it to me online one day. He said, "Dad, I didn't know you sang in Modena with Pavarotti." He went, "Needed a nice one."
The thing is, I think at the time, it's all so fast and furious. It just is a blur, isn't it? There must be a lot of big moments that you've forgotten or have to revisit on YouTube.
But just to finish your question, you know, I didn't know what to do then. And that's I just knew I had a familiar face. People knew who I was. So I just thought, I have to get into TV. I have to be a presenter. I have to figure out, you know, just stay on TV for now until I figure out what I'm going to do. I was always very intrigued and interested in acting. I was always in amateur dramatics as a kid growing up, in local productions and stuff like that. So, going into Corrie for me was a huge reinvention. And it was a whole new discipline, because all of a sudden you're coming from being your own boss in a boy band, traveling around the world, doing your own thing, to having to be in work and time, to know your lines, to having a boss, having many bosses, having to answer to people, having to be on the pecking order. It was a huge discipline I had to learn, you know, and it was a great experience. I mean, my time at Corrie was amazing. The people I met, the people I worked with, still great friends of them today. I went back time and time again because the producer at the time used to let me out to tour with Boyzone and then would take me back after the tour was over. So it was a great time for me. And then obviously it gave producers and directors and casting directors confidence to hire me to do theatre shows. And I ended up doing touring all across Ireland and in theatre shows on the West End for months on end, you know. So coming back to Boys Life was an amazing experience for me. Coming back to the music business, like I said, doing the vocal training with Brian, getting out on stage, singing the lead vocals for the first time in every song. What we're doing together now, we absolutely love. You know, the audience love it. We love it. It's going great. Big club coming now in May. We're on tour again all around the UK.
Don't worry. I got it covered, boys. Yeah. You're doing... And the thing is, you don't just put on a couple of shows. You do major tours and you're shifting a lot of tickets. A lot of tickets. Yeah,
we're very lucky. We're very lucky 30 years later. Like, Boyzone started 30 years ago this year. We did a 25-year anniversary tour called Thank You and Goodnight. And we made a pact with each other that was it. That was Thank You and Goodnight. We're not going to do any more. I wasn't quite sure. It'll be October this year when we got together, the 30th, I think it was like the 4th of October 1993. So it'll be 30 years. I have spoken to Ronan about the idea of just doing a one-off show, just one show. Just
what'd he say?
Just do a really, really nice one show for the dedicated fans that still want to see us. Not a tour. Brian and I are way too busy for me to take time off to do a tour. But
I can't believe Ron said no. He's like, I don't care about the fans. Can't believe he said that.
He did not say that.
Don't care.
What did Ronan say?
Yeah, no, Ronan thought it was a great idea. He said, look, I'm not sure everybody would be up for doing it. You can read into that what you will. It's not a dead idea. There's still talks, still ideas of a one-off show.
Guys, thank you for that. Really interesting to hear about your life lessons. Are you ready for your third and final question?
Yes, ma'am.
We're speaking the day after St. Patrick's Day, and A, I'm amazed that you're coherent, and
alive.
B, alive, not drunk in a ditch. What I wanted to know for question number three, what are the things that you do or have done or say or still say or traditions that you uphold that are inherently Irish, the stuff that only Irish people say and do and believe?
Well, I think just being Irish in general is something that never leaves you. You know, you see so many people that come out of Ireland, whether they be actors or footballers or musicians or politicians or whatever, businessmen, even businessmen you meet in Dubai and stuff, and they never change. The Irishness is always there, you know, yeah. And all these little things, the way they speak, the way they act, even the foods they eat, it never changes. Like, you know, I remember Even when I lived in Australia, I was surrounded by a lot of Irish people. They never bloody changed. They still have their fried breakfast in the morning. They're still very picky about what they drink. Their clothes, even though...
About what they drink.
But even they can't suck it out of a sock. What do you think? You know what I mean? They won't try Australian beers. Like, I wouldn't drink that shit. No. I'll stick to my old text.
They would if there was nothing else in the room.
But like, even clothes, like, even down in Australia, they still wear bloody white socks with sandals.
Their sandals.
You know what I mean? They don't wear the sandals on their own. They still have to wear the socks with them. I can't get the clothes out. Yeah. No. So I think that is, for me, you know, Irish people never change when they leave Ireland. They always
The funniest thing, obviously we've changed because we got the opportunity of traveling all over the world and experiencing different cultures and living in different places. But a lot of most Irish people, they go on holidays to Spain or to Portugal or maybe the States, maybe further afield. But any Irish people that you meet on holiday, the first thing they look for is an Irish bar.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Somewhere to get an Irish breakfast.
Go, where can you get the best Irish breakfast? You're on holidays in Italy. Go to an Italian bar and have some pasta.
Go into that shop there and see to do the Irish sun. Go and see what's going on at home.
You only got here today. It's unbelievable. We just don't like change. We like to keep everything exactly the same. And, oh, great, Dolores. Look, there's an Irish bar. Remember where that is now on the way out tonight. You know what I mean? I bet you they have Guinness on tap in there. Now, it won't be the same as at home. It doesn't travel well. But it'll be grand. It'll do. Mrs. Doyle portrayed a great father, Ted. You know what I mean? If I bring anybody home, you know, it's like a nervous disposition with an Irish mammy. They'll go out and they'll make two fucking trays of sandwiches. They'll have a pot of stew probably on the stove. And it went, are you hungry? Are you are. You are. You have something small. Are you will. You will. Would you like a cup of tea? Are you go on. Actually, here's a few sandwiches I made earlier on. Sure, go on. They're only going to go to waste. So get another one in. Do you like a piece of cake? Yeah, I baked this yesterday. So it's only going to go in the bin. You might go on. You'll have another cup of tea, will you? Have a bowl of stew. You must be starving. Look at you.
And then that's the other thing. Every time you come home, even if we feel like we put on weight, we come home and your mother's like, Jesus, you're not eating you over there at all. Have there no food in England at all? You're not eating nothing.
We could go home 2 stone heavier and your mother would still say, you're not eating right.
Jesus Christ, have you no food over there? You need a good meal inside you. A good meal inside you. And then out comes the sandwich, the staff are there.
It's the same thing when you have a family wedding, you know, and your auntie Patricia comes along, you know, I say, Auntie, what would you like to drink? Oh no, I'm off the drink. I just have a double Bailey.
Can we talk about the way the Irish do death? Because it's very different to the way we...
Great crack. We love death in Ireland.
The only difference between a wedding and a funeral in Ireland is one guest.
That's it.
This is exactly right. So
the father of the bride just
had
the baby, which is great.
So she's just buried her grandmother. And my God, it was like a 3-day party. It was brilliant the way that they celebrated her life. It was extraordinary. You hear someone dies, we all cry, obviously, because it's sad. But it's done in an afternoon.
Weeks as well. You think the players are supposed to say the problem with the UK is when somebody dies, it's weeks before you have a funeral.
Yeah.
Somebody died today in Ireland, today is what day is today? Saturday. Is it?
Yeah. You'd be buried.
Right, you'd be buried on Monday. You got to church on Sunday night, you'd be buried on Monday. Holding it out, when my dad died, unfortunately, about a year ago,
I'm sorry to hear that, Keith.
It was a really, really hard, difficult time. But my son was away working and he couldn't get home. So we postponed the funeral by a day or 2 days. And it was torture because it prolongs that hard grief.
Yeah.
You can't really start grieving until the funeral, until the acceptance of the passing. And then you start to kind of get into the grieving process. But the whole process is prolonged. It doesn't start. The longer you delay the funeral, I feel. You know, you get some closure at the funeral and you could start to maybe mourn. But you can't mourn until the funeral. And in the UK, if somebody you love dies, they take weeks to bury them. I was like, come on, like it's so difficult. Because I lost my dad and I know how difficult that is. And one of our musicians lost their dad. And they were waiting so long for the funeral. I was saying to him, Matt, how are you getting up every day? How are you dealing with it? I wouldn't have been able to deal with this waste.
You've got to get soldier, haven't you? Yeah.
And also, I mean, the way you do it is so different. You keep the body at home in an open casket, so that people can go in and spend time with their loved one and pay their respects.
Yeah. My dad was laid at home in his living room. My dad had his own parlour in the house and it was his parlour. And myself and my brother, we stayed in the room for the... He got home, brought home on the morning, the day before the funeral. And we slept on the floor in his parlour with him all night until the next morning. And then we brought him to the church. You know, I mean, that's, you sit around the coffin, you tell yarns, you tell stories, you drink whiskey, you cry, you laugh, you sing. You know, it's a celebration. The wake in Ireland is great fun. People are coming in and out the door all day. The door's left open. You know, people come, pay their respects. People that you don't even know are coming in, you know, and you don't even ask any questions. It's
people come in just to get the free egg mayonnaise sandwiches.
The egg mayonnaise sandwiches cost me, you know.
Well, when my friend recently buried her grandmother, over 1,000 people turned up for the funeral.
Well, that lady,
and she didn't think that was unusual.
Behind her then, didn't
she? She must have had a big will.
She had a lot of great grandchildren, over 40. Over 40 great-grandchildren.
How old was she when she died?
She was in her 90s, I believe.
Right,
in her
90s.
Yeah. Later. So she'd lived. But, you know, when you look at that, you go, wow, one woman has created like an empire.
Yeah.
By way of a family.
And the women of those days are real matriarchs. You know, you wouldn't cross them. They keep the family together. There'd be no falling out between siblings. There'd be no falling out between cousins. You remain, like, the blood in your system is very important. Families stick together, and the women, the matriarchs of the family, make sure that family stays together. A lot more than the father, a lot more than the patriarch. The matriarchs are much stronger. Women are much stronger in the later years than men are.
They're the CEOs, aren't they, of the family?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. For all the years that I worked with Louis, and you tell me if you've had this experience, but the way he would talk about his mother, he's like one of 9 children, yeah? And he'd talk about his mother like she was frail and old. Ah, me mammy. And for years, I just thought, oh, poor Louis's mum, like she's just probably in a rocking chair and wrapped in a shawl somewhere. And then one day she turns up at the X Factor. She's like bloody Cilla Black. She was amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
His
mother,
right?
His mother was a lovely lady. Years and years ago, after Boyzone went away from Ireland and had all our success in foreign territories and everything else, we came back to do a gig in Kilchimaugh, where Louis grew up. It's in the Midlands in Ireland, in Mayo. It's in the middle of nowhere. It takes 10 hours to drive from Ireland, but that's an exaggeration. Because if you drove 10 hours from Dublin, you'd end up in the Atlantic Ocean. But Kilchimaugh, and we're down, and we're out. I think there's a place called Supermax, which is like a McDonald's, an Irish McDonald's. And they're in every little kind of town and village around the centre of Ireland. And I think we're outside Supermax. The boys, and we had seen Louis for ages and ages. It was months and months because he never came on the road with us. Louis would always base himself in his office in Dublin. But like you said, he had 9 brothers and sisters. I think 3 of his brothers were guards in the police force, or the guards as we know them in Ireland. And his sisters owned the bakeries and blah, 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 blah. You know, and they're a well-known family. The Walsh family are well-known in Kilchimaugh. And we're outside Supermax getting a burger or something. I think it was Supermax. It might have been something else. And this guard comes over and explains that he's Louis's brother and that Louis's mother would love to meet us. And we said, well, we'd love to meet her because he'd always kept his family away from us. So the tour bus went down to Louis's family home where he grew up, where he slept. There was 2 bedrooms of the brothers and sisters. There was a 3-bedroom house. A big house. The bedrooms had 3 double beds. The boys' bedroom had 3 double beds in it. But anyway, we went to the house. His mother cooked us all a big Irish fried breakfast. Louis had no idea we were there. He hadn't arrived. He was coming down on his own in his car later on that day. We hid the tour bus around the back of the house. We were all knackered and jet-lagged. We got well fed by his mother. And she says, the lads, if he's tired, you go on up to the room, the boys' room there, and have a sleep. And the 5 of us went up to Louis' boyhood bedroom. And we all got into bed and we went to sleep. And about 5 o'clock in the evening, there's a knock on the door. Louis sent his mother, Louis's mother sent him up to the bedroom. She said, I was surprised for you up in the bedroom. He had no idea. And Louis went up to his boyhood bedroom, knocked on the door and walked in. And there's boys down asleep in all his brother's beds.
It's like a really weird version of Goldilocks. You both did brilliant impressions of Louis. And I know that at the time he must have tested your patience and then some, but there is always an affection I feel from you both towards him. Would that be right?
Listen, there's no point in ever falling out with Louis because he says things in the press that will absolutely ruin you if you're sensitive. If you're self-conscious or you're sensitive, he says things in the spur of the moment to a journalist. They make it a headline and it sounds like he hates you and he's ripping you asunder. But he doesn't mean it. He genuinely doesn't mean it. He's just selling newspapers. So if you're going to get... Now, it takes you years to realise that and to let him away with it. Like, just recently, I did a Mario Rosenstock's podcast, which is a kind of a... a comedian that has his own radio show back in Dublin. And he does impersonations of me, and he does impersonations of Louis and Brian and all that. He's very good. He's very clever. So I did his podcast, and I explained that when Boyzone started to become big and get really successful, Louis was afraid that, you know, the band were going to become bigger than the creator, and possibly concerned that we changed management or something. I'm not quite sure. But to make sure we kept grounded, to make sure that we kept our feet on the ground, he would insult us in front of other people. And I remember he'd always introduce me to people as, "This is Keith from Boyzone, the one that can't sing," right? And he'd always say that. And he used to make me feel that size when I was a kid. He'd kill your confidence. But we were very famous, and we were doing very well. And I think he was trying to make sure that we didn't get too big for our boots. I didn't need that, because all that was doing was destroying me. But, and you two, like I said earlier, were always my favorite band. So I told Mario on the show, I said, Louis introduced me to Bono as Keith from Boyzone, the one that can't sing. Now, Louis went and done the podcast last week. I did it about 2 months ago. And Mario Rosenstock brought up the story, and he said we had Keith on, and he said that you introduced him to Bono as the one in the band that can't sing. And Louis completely denied it and started ripping me asunder. And then the headlines picked up on it. The papers picked up on the interview. And all of a sudden, I'm getting Google alerts on my phone go, Louis Walsh fights back to Duffy. Saying, why would I even introduce him to Bono? I gave him his only break in life. You know, it's just... You know, but I spoke to Louis the next day, and we didn't even mention the fact that we're all over the papers together. So like, it's off. I was only speaking to Louis 2 days ago. He's off to Miami soon, so I got to hook up with him before he goes. But that's what I'm saying. We're all over the papers, seemingly having this big war on each other. And we spoke on the phone 2 days ago, and we never even mentioned it.
That, which is also quite Irish, right?
Yeah.
Oh, boys, it's been so nice catching up with you. And you are off on tour for the whole month of May across the UK.
Yeah, well, what we've decided to do on this tour was, you know, we've learned our audience. We know what they like. And to be honest, Monday, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, a lot of our audience are school nights. They're mummies, they're grannies, you know, and school nights don't suit them. So what we've tried to do is accommodate that. So we're touring, but we're only actually playing gigs on Thursday nights, Friday nights, Saturday nights, and some Sunday nights. So it means Thursday night, payday, everybody wants to go. Friday night's the weekend, Saturday night's the weekend, and some people like to go on a Sunday. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we've taken off. We're playing golf. So the tour is great. It's all over the whole country, but it's only on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sundays. It's perfect.
I love it. And tickets are available wherever people buy their tickets.
And all the Boys Life socials. Oh, there's a link on all our socials.
Just don't buy from the bloke standing outside the venue.
Yeah, don't do that. But they can expect expect stories like this. A load of songs and a lot of fun.
It's a fun night. You know what? It's a good night for nostalgia because, you know, a lot of the fans that come to the shows, the Boyzone and Westlife songs are kind of the soundtrack to their youth and to their lives, you know? And, you know, when we sing the first Boyzone song, a lot of the people will be remembering the first time they ever heard Boyzone, and they might have been a teenager. And then you've got people that might have got married to a song from Boys on the West Side. So you have a lot of people coming saying that the whole night is a roller coaster trip of nostalgia. And you always remember where you were the first time you heard that song, or it takes you back to a certain time and place. So it is, and it's fun for us too, because it does the same for us, you know, because these songs are so old, it always takes us back to when we had proper knees and no bad backs and our original teeth.
the only problem is now, though, we have to learn the lyrics.
Yeah.
That's a problem for you, Keith, not
Brian.
Oh,
God, honestly, God, I have to write them out 100 times so I can remember them.
Well, good luck with the tour and continued success. It's lovely to catch up with you.
Great time.
And revisit some of those brilliant nights, especially the one in Indonesia, Keith. That will live with me forever.
Let's do it again, Kate.
Yeah, let's go thieving cars in Asia.
I'll teach you how the hot wire retractor.
You probably could as well. Thank you, gents.
Enjoy the rest of your weekend
and good luck on the golf course.
Lovely to see you, Darren. Bye, Kate. See you later.
Bye.
A huge thanks to Keith and Brian. You can catch them on tour across the UK in May. Tickets are available for their Boys Life show in all the usual places. And if you'd like more conversation with other great 90s pop stars, why not dive into our back catalogue, where you'll find episodes with Gary Barlow, Steps, Danny Minogue, All Saints, Hanson, Travis, Charlene Spiteri and Skin from Skunk and Nancy. Oh, and good news. We've started dropping a new mini midweek episode every Tuesday, featuring some of the best bits from some of our very best guests. It's called Something from the Cellar. It's vintage cuts served to your feed every Tuesday afternoon. So to make sure you don't miss an episode, hit the follow button if you aren't already, or make sure you're subscribing to the show. Thanks for listening.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.